the nature study method is firsthand, it's experiential, and he saw it as revolutionizing education.
Welcome to Extension Out Loud, a podcast from Cornell Cooperative Extension. I'm your host, Paul Treadwell. I recently had the pleasure of sitting down with John Lindstrom, the editor behind a new edition of Liberty Hyde Bailey's groundbreaking work, The Nature Study Idea. Liberty Hyde Bailey has been called the father of American horticulture. As the first dean of the College of Agriculture at Cornell University, he was instrumental in starting agricultural extension services and 4-H. John Lindstrom is currently the Mellon Foundation Postdoctoral Fellow in Climate Humanities and Social Justice at the Climate Museum in New York City, but this fall he'll be starting as an Associate Professor of English at Centenary College in Louisiana. John is also the series editor of the Liberty Hyde Bailey Library from Cornell University Press, and a poet. His debut poetry collection, To Leave for Our Own Country, was published this month by Black Lawrence Press. Lindstrom's edition of The Nature Study Idea doesn't just republish Bailey's work. It enriches it with historical context and contemporary insights. Through our conversation, we explore the enduring relevance of Bailey's vision, looking at its implications for education, climate change, and the work of extension. Bailey's ambition to cultivate sympathy with nature and to lead us back into the natural world resonates more deeply than ever before. Join us for our conversation about the nature study idea and its implications for our time. Welcome, John, and thanks for joining us today to talk about Liberty Hyde Bailey and your new edited edition of The Nature Study Idea.
Of course, and thanks so much for having me.
It's just a really good opportunity, and I love talking about Liberty Hyde Bailey and some of the origins of the work that we're currently doing. So for our listeners, can you just give me a quick rundown of Liberty Hyde Bailey and why in 2024 we're talking about him?
Liberty Hyde Bailey was born in my hometown of South Haven, Michigan, in 1858. Grew up on fruit farm, kind of diversified apple orchard, essentially, in the mid-19th century. Received an education at Michigan Agricultural College, which is now Michigan State University. Studied under the preeminent botanist Asa Gray at Harvard, returned to Michigan Ag as a faculty member, and then came to Cornell after two or three years at Michigan to become a professor of horticulture at Cornell, where he would be the founding dean of the College of Agriculture, became really a leader in envisioning what extension could be in the land grant system. He was the director of the experiment station for a while at Cornell and became, in the midst of all that, involved in the nature study movement, which is the focus of this book, and a leader along with Anna Botsford Comstock. And really, Bailey was a horticulturist, but he was also a real Renaissance person in his time. And his philosophical and literary writing is just so beautiful and grounded and spiritual and thoughtful, and I think really speaks to his idea of the human place in the natural world is so nuanced and speaks so well to our current moment, but has been lost in the history of environmental thought. And so I'm working with Cornell Press now on bringing Bailey's books into print, specifically thinking about how they can speak to our current moment and reintroduce them as a series, the Liberty Hyde Bailey Library. And so this edition of The Nature Study Idea is the first volume of that series.
It's fascinating to me when we start revisiting some of the, I hate to use this term, but the thought leaders of the past, the ongoing and continued relevance that they have for our situation at this time is either really hopeful or somewhat depressing.
Sure.
Because you look at some of the things that he was talking about as far as nature study being an attitude of mind and shaping the outlook on the world and this idea of sympathy with nature. These are things that are current now. These are living, breathing ideas that are, but he was onto this 100 plus years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to decide whether I should be hopeful or depressed.
Yeah, I know that feeling. And especially when we start talking about climate change and it's easy to become depressed. I think probably what Bailey would want us to do is look to the ways in which we're talking about some of these same things because of the good work that's happening on the ground in so many of these areas that are in part a result of some of the groundwork that these predecessors laid. So even things like the 4-H program is linked to the junior naturalist clubs that were started at Cornell with Bailey, and there's so much good work still being done. So that's where I take hope. It is sometimes depressing that we look at other sides of education or society and think, wow, the problem that Bailey was pointing to is still a problem as well. Okay. But at least we have these forebears whose work we can fall back on and help us think through that too.
Before we jump into the idea of what is nature study, I want to really surface this idea of sympathy and what it would mean in the context of our conversation. So Bailey mentions sympathy a lot. And can you just unpack that a bit for us?
Yeah, sympathy is a key word for how he thinks about nature study. And he really believed that the end result, not only of nature study, but of all good education, is an increased sympathy with the world in which we live. And for him, that means an analogy I like to think of, if you know the Indian instrument, the sitar, how it has a layer of sympathetic strings that are simply there to vibrate underneath the strings that you pluck. So he thought we need to think about how we're vibrating along with the world in which we live and are attuned to the movements and to the influences around us. And for him, what's great about the way that Bailey talks about sympathy is that's grounded in science, for instance, as one really helpful way of knowing and understanding that world. Bailey's trained as a horticultural scientist. He's considered the father of modern horticulture for the way that he brought the art of horticulture into conversation with the science of botany. And he's a scientist by training, but he believes that scientific inquiry ultimately leads us to this profound sense of wonder, all that we do not know and likely never will know about the universe and our place in it. And that's where you get into the more spiritual or side of things, which he had to defend against accusations from some of his scientific colleagues.
Well, and that really gets into a part of the concept of nature study as he was proposing it. It's not necessarily scientific study. Can we talk a little bit about what nature study as Bailey lays it out? What is the essence or the core of nature study, that idea?
Bailey is very clear in the nature study idea, and this gets to some of the context of the conversations that were happening around the term of the time, that it is not science. So he's against science, but he's saying nature study is something else. His favorite definition that he uses a lot across his writings, which is a kind of wonderfully vague one, is that it's the seeing of things which one looks at and the drawing of proper conclusions from what one sees. And the reason that he distinguishes that from science per se is because he's thinking about how the sciences are systematic, right? And there's an order through which it makes sense to proceed through them to gain that kind of broad systematic knowledge of a field. But nature study had more to do with, and this is especially relevant for younger children, which the core of nature study was geared towards what we would call elementary education. He saw it also as a kind of broader outlook that was relevant to us throughout our lives. But he was interested in the way in which we know the world and learn to find our place in it. And there is a kind of education that could be natural, in his words, that could imitate the way that we discover our place in the world. Nature study was an experiential model of education, as opposed to the kind of sit still on benches model or recitation, which was really a prominent mode of education in the 19th century, where you would be reciting from a textbook in front of the class, working on elocution, but also learning the subject matter through simply reading it out loud. Nature study went beyond working from models in the classroom, which was still a new thing in the sciences, at least for elementary, where you might have a model of a flower, Bailey said, he writes in the Nature Study idea something like the old model was to look at a model flower and then say, go out and find me one of these, where the Nature Study method is to go and find a flower and ask what it is. So it's firsthand, it's experiential. And he saw it as revolutionizing the whole of education, not just the sciences. It's an outlook toward education, privileges the experiences of the child's life, the near at hand, and learning to approach one's life through a spirit of inquiry that will then animate every other aspect of their life. The Nature Study Bureau at Cornell and the program there that Bailey's leading comes out of this concern about why were people leaving the farms and moving into cities. And Bailey, we're not doing a very good job helping people in the country develop this kind of outlook on the world. It leads to us kind of sympathy and wonder and curiosity that can sustain you throughout your life. And the Nature Study outlook, this attitude of observation, drawing of conclusions from those observations that are grounded conclusions toward the end of sympathy with nature, that was the process that was going to help stitch together the elements of rural society and carry that into the future.
When we talk about Liberty Hyde Bailey, and especially with extension work, he had this firm belief that for extension to be effective, the extension worker, the agent, educator, had to be a part of that community.
Yes.
And in some ways, what we're talking about here with Nature Study is really doing the same thing on an individual basis and making human beings members of the natural community.
Yeah.
It strikes me, this idea that in order to understand anything, you have to be there with the things to develop that sympathy, to start resonating common frequency. So that to me is a thread that is woven through some of his work.
The Nature Study movement and Bailey's understanding of extension and how it worked and local communities, Bailey argued very forcefully in the Nature Study idea that it was already being referred to as a movement and it was revolutionizing public education in the United States. Concepts that we have today that we take for granted, like the field trip, emerged out of the Nature Study movement. And Bailey argues the Nature Study movement is not a movement driven by university scientists like himself. Mm-hmm. And there had been some particularly rather sexist attacks mounted by some of his colleagues in academia against some of these Nature Study teachers, saying that they were sentimentalizing nature, and the word sympathy that Bailey wanted to hold on to quickly morphed into sentimentalizing in these critiques. And the fact that they were, for instance, sometimes incorporating poetry into these Nature Study lessons, that's dangerous because that's not scientific. It's not based on facts, quote unquote. But Bailey said, no, the Nature Study movement itself is a movement that originates with and is driven by teachers in their local communities. Bailey really, not only was he defending these women teachers, it was because of his Nature Study work and his increasing relationship with these teachers across New York State and around the country that he hires the first woman professor at Cornell University, who is Anna Botsford Comstock, to help run the Nature Study program. And that's a name that I'm sure will be familiar to some of your listeners, the author of The Handbook of Nature Study, which is to this day, I think, the best-selling book in print from Cornell University Press, still in use. And that came out of this Nature Study program that Bailey was the head of for a long time. And then Comstock was denied a full teacher's salary for years. But then Bailey would hire Martha Van Rensselaer to lead the home economics department. And there was this core, and within the Nature Study movement, you also had Ada George, Julia Rogers, I'm going to miss some names, but Alice McCloskey. There's a lot of women faculty who were connected to the movement on the ground. And there's this great story about how early on when they were taking up this work, Bailey and Anna Comstock rode around together around the state by horse and buggy, visiting different schools and meeting with teachers. And a lot of writing in the Nature Study idea comes out of these meetings with teachers. Bailey, we really started out listening to what teachers were telling him and doing and what was working for them and what wasn't and the questions that were arising. And then Bailey thinking about those things, synthesizing them, sharing them with other teachers. And that formed, over time, these lectures evolved. The lectures formed a kind of core section of the book, as well as this kind of delightful inquiries and answers question, basically a Q&A at the end of the book, which you don't want to skip if you're reading it, because there's lots of really great stories in there and beautiful writing too. But he wanted the book to be super useful to teachers. This is another thing that makes Bailey so visionary, I think, is that he's having these high-level intellectual academic discussions with his colleagues, but also very much boots on the ground in communities, and he's able to kind of code switch and translate in ways that really value the input and contributions of people working outside of the academy and the fact that they also are invested in the research that's being done. Bailey's first job before he started teaching at Michigan Agricultural College, he was a journalist for a little while, working on the Springfield Morning Monitor in Illinois and covering politics and the arts. And he was writing for a general audience. Mm-hmm. And you can see his skill in as a communicator really comes through in books like The Nature Study Idea and really across his writing.
I want to jump back in to a little bit of the book and talk about the youth, because The Nature Study Idea was focused on engaging kids, youth. So Bailey said, good nature study teaching develops personality and encourages the pupil to think for himself and to maintain an individual relation to his world. It emphasizes adaptation to life as distinguished from the tendency of much of our teaching to produce uniformity of thought and action. That's a beautiful quote from The Nature Study Idea. And I was wondering if you could help me understand how that plays out in the work of first The Nature Study Idea moving into junior naturalists and currently in our 4-H system that we have across the country. How do they embody that concept?
All of these educational programs, extracurricular educational programs that are outgrowths of the nature study movement have so much potential, partly because they're able to operate outside of that centralized system of public education to really provide the opportunity for children and students to realize their full potential as full human beings with diverse interests and affections and sympathies, to use a Baileyan term. And for Bailey, this was one of the great, some nature study proponents were really focused on, for instance, conservation. We need to educate children to be good stewards of our planet. Okay, that's good and important. But there's this more fundamental level of just end of nature study as the end of all education, Bailey writes, I'm paraphrasing slightly, is to make the individual happy. So he really believed that another really fun and funny quote, there's a lot of humor in the book, is he's talking about this idea that education equips us to live full and fulfilling lives by giving this little parable that one individual might find companionship in a dandelion, one of his favorite recurring motifs, that there's so much beauty in this dandelion, this quote-unquote weed that we so often despise or don't look at or appreciate for its beauty. One may find comradeship in a dandelion, another might find it in a groggery. And inasmuch as there are more dandelions than groggeries, parentheses, in most communities, the educated man has the greater chance of happiness. It's about programs like 4-H or the Junior Naturalists under John Spencer, who is part of Bailey's team at Cornell, doing in many ways what Bailey Extension could do in communities, which is provide the tools for individuals in communities to become experimenters themselves and to seek out knowledge about the world independently using these skills and problem solve these localized issues. So that's the finding comradeship in a dandelion rather than a groggery is the image that I always come back to for that because it's so colorful.
It was a pleasure to read from my 2024 perspective. So I encourage everybody to seek out the book at your local bookseller and grab a copy. In going back to his words, early on in the nature study idea, he says it's one of the marks of the progress that we're coming more and more into sympathy with the natural world in which we dwell. The happiest life has the greatest number of points of contact with the world, and it has the deepest sympathy with everything that is. That, to me, is one of those key fundamental threads that ties Bailey into the current work that's going on with a lot of regenerative things or a lot of relocalization work.
So optimistic, too. That's one of the things I love about reading Bailey is this persistent optimism. And I think it's really born. He would come back as a touchstone to his childhood often throughout his writing. And you just get little snippets here and there. He never wrote a memoir or an autobiography. But of course, I've got a special kind of interest in his childhood in South Haven because that's where I grew up. And it's always fun to imagine how different that place was. At the time that he grew up there, it was considered a real frontier settlement. And I think it was after his birth that they erected the first school and the first church in town. And so his parents were really among the first wave of European settlement in that area. And so it was a town with very few resources. And yet he dedicates the nature study idea to this childhood teacher who he knew at this time, Julia Field King. It was Julia Field. She was teaching him. She encouraged him to learn from the world around him, even though she had no background in natural history. It was something Bailey showed interest in. They found this natural history textbook as an aid. Julia Field would simply pose questions to Bailey, and then he would go out and have to find answers in the woods and fields. And he said in either an interview or somewhere in the book that she kept him growing for a blessed year, posing these questions that he had no answers for, and then he would have to go investigate. His neighbor was this peach grower, Aaron Dykman, who erected the first in town with an open air stage where Bailey saw his first performance of Shakespeare. So he knew this life on the land and in the natural world was also a very interesting cultural life with lots of community and cultural expressions going on. And this whole narrative that culture was in the city and life in the country was unrefined or backward, that was a prejudice that was very alive in that moment and persists. Bailey knew that it wasn't true. So he really had this kind of optimistic faith that it's a matter of, he used the word outlook a lot, or perspective, or seeing, to go back to the metaphor of nature study as being a process of seeing what you look at and drawing conclusions from it. And that also goes back to a lesson that he attributed to Julia Field, which was that she said to him one day, she felt bad because he was going through the world blind. And he protested and she said, answer this random question about how many maple trees you pass on the way to school. And he couldn't do it. So showing that he'd been walking a mile through the woods each day to school, but had been in his head or thinking about other things and not observing the world, not attentive to that world or sympathetic to it. So there were ways that one could increase one's sympathy with the world.
So just as far as the story of walking through a woods and not seeing the trees, there's the trees for the forest, is even more prevalent today with the number of devices that we're all engaged in. And I think that one of the calls to action is to really just turn it off and take a walk through the woods or through a park and re-engage with the physical world that's out.
And Bailey was literally saying that about books. He said, close your book. so much harder today, right? With all those different layers of mediation.
Yeah. So it really is that re-engagement, that becoming an animal again and not being embarrassed about that fact or being afraid to be that part of nature, I think is one of the most resonant things. It is reclaiming our sense of belonging in this natural world and not our sense of belonging in any sort of virtual or artificial world.
Yeah, and you can belong to the natural world without throwing out your love of Shakespeare, for instance, right? So it's, on the one hand, essentializing nature or some quote-unquote natural lifestyle the way that people would do with primitivism and some of those other logical traps. But you can love Shakespeare and love the dandelions, and that's all part of being human. And you don't want to lose the dandelion.
In the section on The New Hunting, page 147, Bailey says, "Man is not responsible for the tragedies of nature, but he is responsible for the tragedies that he himself inflicts." That, to me, is tremendously powerful because it lets us engage with nature and be part of that world, but not assume the devastation that nature can sometimes inflict, but also owning the damage that we do as human beings moving through the world, exploiting the world.
And it gets to his larger philosophy. The Nature Study Idea, published in 1903, and it's his first sustained philosophical work. It's popular philosophy and it's literary and accessible, but it gets at these kind of fundamental claims about our place in the world. And he would continue to develop these ideas. The most well-known example is The Holy Earth in 1915, where he draws out that idea further as an argument against war. Darwinism is still quite new culturally, and it's influencing all these different elements. And some people are using it as a justification for war, survival of the fittest, conflating the poet Tennyson's Red in Tooth and Claw with Darwin and saying it's going to be the survival of the strongest. And Bailey says, look, if you actually look at the evolution of life, what are the animals that survive? The small one, the flexible, the adaptable. Survival of the fittest means survival of the most adaptable. It's no license for wanton slaughter or racial domination. Bailey avoids a lot of the eugenic pitfalls of his peers, partly because he's got this nuanced understanding of evolution. And his big evolution text was titled The Survival of the Unlike, right? So he would, and he was very interested in the early ecological writings that were coming out. The word ecology is coined around this time. Yeah. Also, I'm a literary scholar by training. And when I was an undergraduate student, I took some courses in literary eco-criticism, and it sometimes got very heady and theoretical. And one of the arguments is this debate between an anthropocentric perspective and an ecocentric perspective. Is it human-centered or is it ecology-centered? And I think Bailey would view debate as inherently ridiculous because you're never going to see nature from outside of a human perspective. And we shouldn't necessarily even want to. Yet also, we have these inescapable responsibilities. And he can really see that, yes, we're part of nature. We can't imagine ourselves as separate from nature. But we're also responsible. We might today think about it in terms of we're the first species in the history of life on Earth, as far as we know, responsible for a mass extinction. There's another great quote in The Holy Earth where he's using the imagery and language of the Old Testament, that part of how he's drawing out these ethics, and the passage from Genesis about man being given dominion over the natural world, which is often used as a way to, from an environmental perspective, to critique a Judeo-Christian tradition. But Bailey says, man is given dominion. He's given no commission to devastate. And we do occupy a different position of influence from the rest of the world on our ecosystems and our homes. And that means responsibility. That means stewardship. And that's why the perspective of the farmer, or oftentimes for Bailey, of the gardener, is so instructive, because the best farmers, in Bailey's perspective, are those who leave the land more productive than it was when they took it. He says in The Nature Study Idea, good farmers are good naturalists. And he was so inspired by Darwin and evolution because it proved that we have even a genealogical relationship with all the rest of life on Earth, right? We're all from the same origin. And what does that mean in terms of ethics? And this is why Bailey was so influential on the thinking of Aldo Leopold, who develops the idea of a land ethic in the Sand County Almanac. Mm-hmm. But in Leopold's earlier, less well-known book, Game Management, he points to Bailey as the earliest example of this kind of thinking about responsibility.
So before we go into the next section, I really want to say we mentioned a couple of books by Bailey. They are available online, are they not? So for curious listeners, they can go to...
Yes.
Where can they go?
Most of Bailey's books are in the public domain now. So if you search them, you can find them on Google Books, or I like using Internet Archive because it's a little easier to know what you're reading. In terms of Bailey in print, there's an edition of the whole... I've worked a lot on trying to get him more in print. So my name has been a few of these, but there's an edition of The Holy Earth that's available with a foreword by Wendell Berry from Counterpoint Press. I also co-edited an anthology of Bailey's garden writings that are his philosophical musings on the garden called The Liberty-Eyed Bailey Gardener's Companion. The nature study idea that we're talking about, this new edition, is not only available in print, but it's also open access online. So if you go to Cornell Press's website, you can read it online for free. And there's a great collection of Bailey's agrarian and environmental writings edited by Zachary Michael Jack called Liberty-Eyed Bailey, Essential Agrarian and Environmental Writings. And that's still in print.
And I'll be sure we provide show notes that direct people to some of those sources and also Cornell University Press so they can pick up their own personal copy of the nature study idea. And then John, I'd really like to shift our focus for a minute to a couple things that Bailey says in the nature study idea that directly address the idea of extension and the relationship of human beings to the natural environment. And you already, this quote, man is a land animal and his connection with the earth, the soil, the plants, animals, and atmosphere is intimate and fundamental. The earth relationship is best expressed in agriculture, not agriculture merely as livelihood, but as the expression of the essential relationship of man to his home planet. So can you talk a little bit about how that idea animates some of his other writings on engagement with the world and agriculture and the role of extension?
Bailey wrote about the country. He was from a rural background. His interests and sort of intellectual allegiance and understanding of the world were all rooted in rural communities. But he, in 1905, saw this really urgent need to repair some of these severed connections between country and city, because this is a fundamental relationship, and the problem is just that people don't have their eyes open to it, right? One thing, perhaps, because extension can be rooted in communities like this and in communities with these that still have these strong cultural ties to the land and that are built around that, is to look for ways to build those bridges. And Bailey was doing this through nature study. Mm-hmm. There were correspondence programs between rural kids in upstate New York and students who were connected to Teachers College at Columbia. And there was a really robust nature study program in New York City and in Chicago and in other really major metros at the time, where there was more of a focus on reconnecting with the natural world. To a certain extent, that's also what Bailey was saying in rural areas, because it's an issue of opening one's eyes to the nature that is around you, right? But there are these vacant lots being transformed into gardens all across New York City at the time. This is the Progressive Era. There's a lot of work on improving working conditions and living conditions in slums and rundown neighborhoods and cities. And so the nature study movement's part of that. And Bailey's finding ways to bridge those rural urban divides and build an understanding of that fundamental relationship with the land for children in urban as well as rural districts. And there's also correspondence happening between white children in upstate New York and black children in the rural South through the Cornell Nature Study Program, partnering with schools like Tuskegee in Hampton in the South that have their own Nature Study programs where they're running, you know, basically like teachers college type programs for Black teachers in the South to be able to teach Nature Study in rural schools. And so there's also this interesting way that it's crossing racial lines, it's crossing gender lines, it's crossing the urban-rural divide. And the foundation of it all is this outlook to nature that has to do with this fundamental relationship that all of us share with the planet that could serve not only to help us repair our relationships with the natural world. Bailey remembered trapping passenger pigeons with Potawatomi kids as a child on the farm in South Haven. He saw the extermination of the passenger pigeons around the time that he's writing these books. So they know the extent and the possibility of human destruction. It's not only repairing those bonds, but also the bonds between us as people and societies and communities.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Extension Out Loud was produced and edited by Paul Treadwell. For more information about this episode, including show notes and a transcript, visit extensionoutloud.com. And be sure to subscribe to Extension Out Loud on your favorite podcast directory.